Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Thrive in EDU podcast. I am Rochelle Denae-Pose. If you're listening for the first time, thanks for joining in. I hope you will continue to listen. And if you've been listening, then thanks for coming back for another episode. I am very excited today because I have a guest and I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Coincidentally, my guest is located not that far from me. So I don't want to spend any more time other than diving into the conversation with my guest today, who is Jason Lang, who is the co-founder and president of Bloomboard. So first of all, Jason, welcome.
Thanks so much. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you because as my listeners know, a lot of the times it's just been me having a conversation with myself. But I know you could appreciate this too because, you know, you're so focused on teacher professional development and learning and growing that that is a really important part of the reflective process too. And I didn't necessarily know that at first when I started having conversations with myself, but I'm excited to speak with you today and learn all about, what you do in your work. And then also, of course, what Bloomboard provides for educators. So first, before we dive into some conversation about, Bloomboard specifically, tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Sure. So really quick background. So I grew up in Chicago outside the Midwest, did teacher prep in undergrad. Was a pretty interesting undergrad experience. I was pretty fortunate to go to Yale, which is a life-changing opportunity. I always joke, I pretty much just got in because I could play football and ended up doing teacher prep and love being in schools. And I'm a elementary school teacher in my core of core and loved being in classrooms with kids. My mentor, when I graduated, said I should go get a real job and that I could always go back into education, which is something we still deal with today. And so I went into finance, spent a bunch of years there, hated it, just found it to be sort of the most soulless place ever. And I wasn't actually doing anything to sort of contribute to the world. And so went back to grad school, spent a bunch of time just trying to think about technology in education and where can technology help. And while I was in this joint degree program, was really looking at sort of what levers could we pull. And this whole idea of how we train and scale really great instruction just kept coming up. So it's been pretty interesting to sort of see that was 13 years ago since I went down this startup journey. My wife loves to joke that she always is like, when you told me that startups were like a 5 to 7 year thing, I didn't think we'd be here, 13 years later. It's like, well, it might take us another 13 years to really do the
right
where we ultimately need to go. But, it's been a pretty amazing journey and a pretty amazing process.
Yeah. And I always am inspired and just curious about people's stories because so often you see an educator, for example, and you think they've always been in education or, people think you always want to be a teacher or something like that. And your path, all the different ways that you've been involved in so many different areas of work, it's a good lesson for anybody who's listening just to know that, you can always change your path and learn new things and adapt because we have to be like that. And as an educator, I know for my students, I teach Spanish and I want them to know Spanish, but I also realize they need to have skills to be able to adapt to whatever is coming down the road in the future. And so what can I do in my classroom to prepare them? So I love hearing the background story. And with the startups, it does not happen overnight. It's an ongoing process, but it's a very rewarding process too, to have that background and to experience the struggle and all of those things that can come with that. So thanks for sharing a little bit about you. And so connecting with that, tell us a little bit about what your role is with Bloomboard and, what gave you the inspiration to kind of go in this direction and start the company?
Yeah. So, so I founded the company again, 13 years ago. Really at the end of the day, right, all of my work, I had been sort of doing a bunch of work with New Schools Venture Fund, which is sort of one of the early charter school investors and was trying to sort of just spur more innovation in schools. And this was, mid-2000s. So technology wasn't necessarily a thing yet in education. And so as I had been looking across all different ways that technology was changing in healthcare and other systems, the question was where can technology be most helpful in actually reaching and sort of building better educations for all kids? And really all of the research that we have even today points back to just the teacher and the quality of the teacher in the classroom matters most. That is the thing outside of zip code, which unfortunately we can't control. It's the thing that sort of really drives the most outcomes. And so at that point it was all right, well, what what ways can we use technology and what can help the most? You know, in the early days, it's sort of funny, we've had this really interesting arc and journey. In the early days of our world, a lot of the work was just about like what training actually helps teachers the most. And we actually built sort of an Amazon marketplace for PD to just try and figure out, right, what's actually most useful. And we gave teachers millions of dollars of Gates Foundation funding and other sort of resources and other state funds. And the whole idea was, let's build this whole marketplace and we'll aggregate every type of PD possible. And we'll let teachers choose, and then we'll track their student data and their teacher observation data. And we'll, let's just see what actually helps the most. And it was a pretty interesting time because we had all these different partners. And then at some point we sort of looked up and we're like, you know what? None of this actually matters, which is like a, you know, spending many years of your life in a startup sort of entrepreneur to sort of come to just sort of a realization that like, we're not actually really moving the needle, because turns out teacher training, teacher PD, just doesn't really matter. Like it is a checkbox in the most true form of checkbox, you know, sort of realities. And what we found in the early days was like, we had a couple of partners who were basically doing video-based coaching. So this was pre-iPhone. iPhones were still new, but the idea that like you could videotape someone and then give them annotated timestamped feedback on their practice along with their lesson plan and everything else, that was really interesting and became this sort of, you know, the where we said like, if we can really change practice, and the feedback from teachers was like, this is amazing. Unfortunately, the second piece of feedback they always gave us was like, but it's way too scary and vulnerable. You know, you probably like being more on camera than most, but like most people don't want to be on camera. And the idea that you're going to videotape yourself and upload it to the black box of the internet, where an expert's going to rate you and give you feedback and potentially tell you you're not as good a teacher as you think you are, is a vulnerable exercise in humility and growth that I think just, you know, we as human beings are not totally conditioned to do. But that we knew that that would actually help change practice. So that really became the core to say, well, let's sort of shut down this whole marketplace thing because it's not working and it's just sort of checking this compliance box. And let's really figure out how could we use portfolio-based coaching to change the field and change the profession. And so that's been the core. And so for the last about 7-8 years, a lot of our world has been, we started out doing a bunch of licensure work, and I spent many years trying to rewrite licensure law, which is also cool. And right, that's a super, but like we've been pretty good at it. So there are a lot of states now that have new licensure laws for portfolio-based licensure as an alternative to multiple choice tests, right? Or time. And as we started to get more traction in that world, ultimately we said, well, if we can now do licensure in portfolio form, what if we could actually take the real step and start to do full degrees in portfolio form? And so the last couple of years, we approached a couple of really innovative higher ed partners and said, hey, you know, we have this ability, we have this new sort of learning management sort of structure that'll allow you to actually create an entirely job embedded degree built on artifacts of actual instruction and giving feedback on their actual craft. And that instead of teachers, and I was joking, my teacher prep, I had some pretty old school professors who would play these videos that were 2-3 decades outdated. And, you know, they would pause the video periodically and say, all right, which student is in his or her zone of proximal development? And we would debate ZPDs for a whole class session, which in a joint degree classroom with like business school and ed leader sort of people, that is a contentious argument, because people are like, why am I here? This is totally useless. And so it was never going to make me a better teacher. And yet I paid many thousands of dollars for that 3-credit course to go on a transcript, because that's the world we live in. And so now the idea that for that same 3-credit course, we have teachers, we have educators who are taking their lesson plan and their video of themselves delivering that lesson plan and the student work coming out of it, and that evidence, they're getting one-on-one feedback from a faculty member, and they're using that portfolio and that feedback to confer that same 3-credit course, just changes the opportunity for how we think about, right, what ed prep and what teacher prep looks like as a whole. And so it's super exciting as a time.
Yeah. And there are so many things that you said that I was like, I have to make a mental note to come back to, because it, and I'm sure that anybody who's listening too, like it resonates so well, because, you know, professional development has been, I don't like to necessarily use the term pain point, but a lot of people use that, you know, because teachers will go into a professional development session and after however many hours it is, like they walk away and they either feel overwhelmed or they feel defeated or they feel like they just, you know, they could have spent their time elsewhere doing something that's meaningful and authentic to them and personalized, and or a combination of those things. And you know, I know schools do their best because one, they're kind of limited because they, in some cases, because they have like initiatives or things or trainings that have to be done. But then there's other time to do the development. I can relate to your story that you shared about like watching the video because I did not have the best methodology courses and I kind of just landed in the classroom. And so many things that I've learned over the years have been just on my own. Like, what's that acronym? I don't know what it is. And, fortunately, we have the technology to connect with others and learn in quick ways. Like PD used to be like, you have to be in the same place. So we know you don't have to be in the same place. You don't have to be doing something with a whole group of people. It can be just you by yourself. And that video piece I laugh at as well, because observations, some people are like, I love being observed. And others are like, I don't like it. Or, you know, that vulnerability, but our students experience that too. And so if we're asking them to kind of like, we're going to assess you and come speak with us one-on-one or do a presentation, we should be prepared to do the same things too. And that is not something that I always believed in. I've learned that over the years and improved. So, you know, all of the things that you're talking about, you know, when we come back to Bloomboard, looking at, you know, K through 12 education. So if an educator is like, okay, I've been listening and I hear all this. So what is it exactly that, you know, you're trying to solve with Bloomboard in terms of like K through 12 education? What's the problem?
Yeah, so fundamentally, we are trying to solve the teacher shortage, right? Which is a gnarly problem. And the fundamental reality of the world we live in today is that we no longer have a population of 20-year-olds in college ed prep programs that can staff our schools. Full stop. That's a little terrifying because, right, the world, like, Secretary of Education Cardano sort of spoke a couple months ago. And basically we had a little bit of this like Reading the Riot Act to a bunch of superintendents that I was fortunate to join. But his whole sort of thesis was, look, remember the world in COVID where like you couldn't open schools because so many teachers were either sick or sort of worried about coming in. And so like we had to close schools because we didn't have enough bodies to staff them. And like, that's a world that we could actually, and we're starting to see happen in the country. And that there's a world where like we have districts in rural Colorado and Texas and places that are going to 4-day work weeks at the school level where everybody drops their kid off at a local church community center on a Friday that's not school, but that allows for some flexibility because they don't have enough teachers to staff their classrooms. And that's going to be a real problem for kids, right? For outcomes, for sort of future generations. And so fundamentally, our goal from the Bloomboard side is we have to figure out how we reimagine the teacher prep world. And we can't do it on the back of this sort of 20-year-old population in colleges. And in reality, the best population we have that we could serve is sort of this adult learner, paraeducator, long-term sub, right, career changer population that realize that teaching can be an amazing profession. And that there are now a bunch of new pathways that if we can solve, you know, we survey thousands of paras at this point every week, every month in terms of across our districts. It's a crazy amount. It's like 50 to 60% of all paras and subs would actually like to be fully certified, but the vast majority of them actually don't have a bachelor's degree or they have a bachelor's out of field and they don't have a bachelor's in field. And so today we put all these hoops. So you got to, you know, go back nights and weekends and do your coursework and spend hours away from your family. And then you've got to pay thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars out of pocket to go get those degrees. That's not a way to actually invite people into a profession. And so what we've been able to do is say, well, what if we could partner with higher ed and offer that same degree at a much cheaper price point so that it effectively is subsidized by federal aid and district funding and some of these new teacher apprenticeship grants. So there's no out-of-pocket cost to the candidate, right, for the most part. And at the same time, what if we could embed the coursework of that degree entirely into your day job? So you did it during the 7:30 to 3:30 day job that you have as an educator while you're working full time. And it's just part of your release schedule is you have a time where you're building your portfolio and you're getting feedback on your artifacts. And that's what's conferring all 60 or, you know, 30 credits that you need to earn that degree. And that's a crazy world, but it's so much more convenient. And so we've seen these programs sort of explode in demand. And that it's a really interesting, like a lot of our world is trying to help serve this adult learner population that's effectively been locked out of higher ed. And, you know, from a social justice standpoint, from an equity access standpoint, right, it's really about, we have amazing people in our schools today who've been paras, who've been long-term subs, who like really know how schools work, really know how to reach kids. And yet those people right now are pretty locked out of schools. And that's what the goal is can we solve that problem, create this next generation of educators? And if, you know, they're coming in, even if you've got no high school credit or they've got an associate's degree, give them a 2-year residency-like experience, 2-year student teaching-like experience, where over the entire 2 years, they're getting daily, weekly feedback on their actual practice to become a really great educator.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, listening to you speak, but just focusing on like the teacher shortage too, which for years, it's just, that wasn't a problem, right? Because it seemed like schools, people that I would know, they would say, oh, we had 1,000 applicants, or, you know, it's like, how do you sift through all of those applications? And then I know my own experience, at one point I had taken a sabbatical, and now teaching a language as Spanish, you know, teaching yep. Spanish, it's not like there are tons. And I tell my students all the time, we need teachers in general, but we really need Spanish teachers. But mm-hmm. we really couldn't find anybody. And I was lucky to find one person who actually had just moved here from Texas, coincidentally, and she was the only one. And so it has shifted, and there is this shortage, and some schools have been doing some different things, like people that work in the business fields, you know, getting them emergency certified. And, you know, there's lots of things, ways that schools are trying to solve it. But what, in your opinion, do you see as like the underlying cause of a teacher shortage?
Well, I mean, we talk about this from our sort of leadership standpoint. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the profession has not evolved in the way other professions have, right? And so the role of teaching right now is probably a little too hard relative to, right, what it should be and what it could be. And that's a more of a foundational issue. I think when we talk about it from the Bloomboard lens, a lot of the way we think about it is we're building, right, and working with districts to really embed in the logistical processes systems, how do you sort of create access to these sorts of degree pathways? But we know is that like people still churn out of teaching a lot. And certainly the alt cert, right, career switchers, it's one of the biggest problems is, right, you plug somebody from a business field who's used to some corporate environment, you plug them into a classroom, they don't get a lot of training before they get in that classroom. And they're like, holy cow, kids are hard to deal with. Well, no, and they don't stay. And so I think our lens is we do need to start. And if we want to solve this problem, like we have a whole net new set of, you know, people that we can help bring into the profession. But at the same time, we have to start to take a look and figure out like, how do you start to then change the role of a teacher? And certainly AI and ChatGPT and some of these new staffing models have really crazy implications. But the idea is, right, what does it look like to actually start to change the role and some of the scaffolding around how teachers advance to elevate teachers? You know, Houston's doing this really interesting, you know, it's almost like a thinking about teachers as like academic surgeons, right? Where, you know, surgeons don't prep their patients, right? They have nurses, they have sort of aides to be able to do that in the same way, right? I know Collier, the former Collier superintendent, is a pretty close friend. We've had lots of conversations about how do you use data to sort of create this idea of like academic surgery so that we have really great teachers who really understand curriculum and content, and they can get a kid really clearly remediated into exactly what they're supposed to know, but they have all the time and space and they know the data and they know how to do that. And so they're removing some of the frustration from teaching and some of the, you know, sort of ways that we're managing students and how to manage classrooms. But that's a very big retooling that needs to take place over the next several years just to make the job more friendly in the process. And so I think that's really the question is, how do you make the job something that's really appealing? You know, I say all the time, like, we should own the younger generation. Like, there's no more purpose-driven generation than the Gen Zers in the world. And it's why we're starting to see people in career switchers. Like, people go into corporate America and they're like, I don't want to sell widgets. Like, I don't want to push paper. Like, that sucks. I having been in finance, it sucks. Like, you work and you do nothing for an entire year. And you're like, well, you could have removed me from society and nothing would have changed. And so people want to feel like they are doing good work. I would argue there is no better work in the world than to educate our next generation of kids. And so if you want to give back, we need to make it easier for you to do so. And we need to make it a more welcoming career. And then we'll have millions of teachers that we can pull from and that we can train and we can support to make sure they're really high quality.
Yeah. And I have to say, before I ask you my next question that was popping in my head here, is that I love the authenticity and just like the realness of what you're saying, because it's true. I mean, these are a lot of things that we need to consider. And I say to my students often, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm going to give you the reality. You know, there's a lot of possibilities out there. So, you know, you do the best that you can. And then if it doesn't work out, like, it's just all part of like, you never stop learning, basically. Like, there's always somewhere to go from there. And one thing that I was thinking of as you were talking is, you know, I have some friends that work in higher education, and they work with, you know, people who are in teacher education programs, and they're often doing interesting, you know, activities. But in your view, with people that you've talked with and, you know, your experience, how is traditional, you know, higher education, is it succeeding or failing with the teacher preparation models that they have in place?
I mean, I think the problem, you know, again, there's really wide variation in higher ed today. And so I would say, you know, everything from like certainly the more old school and ivory tower, right, which is what our higher ed, right, sort of system gets bashed for, right? The ivory tower approach and the theory-based approach to training teachers doesn't work. Like, we have pretty good data, and all our data on teacher training and PD says that like the more you're doing and the more you're actually getting feedback on what you're doing, that's what actually makes you learn. And so, you know, the number of reflection papers, and you know, we have sort of folks on our team were like, oh yeah, like I did a math course and I didn't learn any math, but I did, like, you know, I wrote a 7-page paper on the found, you know, why Brahmagupta invented zero. That's not helpful. Like, that's not going to actually make you a better teacher. And yet that is a pillar of most teacher prep in the world we live in. And so it's trying to not sort of overcorrect and say everything needs to be, right? We know teachers need great content. They need to get content knowledge, right? They need to be able to understand the work, but there's also the full pedagogical side of the work. Just, you're not going to learn that without being in front of kids. And, you know, higher ed's beholden to, you know, what used to be the 8 weeks, the 12 weeks of student teaching. That's not enough. And so there's a lot of really interesting ways now to live inside of the same construct of the degree, but really anchor on what does this look like to do this in practice? And what if your courses could be fully job embedded based on your actual practice? And that not only has the potential to create much better trained teachers who really understand and can implement and work with kids, but also just sort of, again, solve this sort of equity access problem we have in terms of people just not being able to do the nights and weekends and the extra, you know, rigmarole of having to go back to school.
Yeah. And I know, like in my school, we have interns and they're there for most of the year. When I student taught, it was the semester. And so, and they're not even called student teachers anymore. They're, you know, interns, or there's different terms for those, but it really doesn't necessarily prepare you for it. And I know a lot of educators too, that want to get additional professional development, like finding that time to do that is tough. And, you know, it leads to a lot of issues like teacher burnout, or, you know, you feel like you're not prepared enough. Like, I'll never have enough time to learn about this new thing or this new technology because it doesn't fit into the day and I'm already spending all these extra hours. So for, you know, using with Bloomboard, how is Bloomboard helping districts when it comes to, you know, training and keeping and advancing educators to stay and to keep on moving? Is there anything that you can share about that process?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think we tend to look at it as it's sort of trying to manage this idea of like, what are all the different incentives and how do you overlap them, right? Having spent so much time, the number of conversations I've had with Soups and other folks about like, if you're just thinking about PD as like teacher training, right, you've effectively already lost, right? Because teachers, right, they don't have any more time. And so anything that's additive to the day just feels like another stressor. And so the question becomes like, how do you now combine? So if you've got a growth path where you know you've got a pay scale bump for doing XYZ, how do you combine that growth scale with your actual PD and say, well, here, if you do this, you're not only going to make more money, but you're also going to get great training. And on top of that, right, how do you make that connected to the stuff that matters, to your point, to you as a teacher that helps bring in AI and other sort of tools in the classroom that helps you sort of learn the things that you need. Or if you're trying to figure out, right, some new context, some new classroom management, right, some new sort of, you know, small group instruction, what does that look like? We just right now, we don't do a great job as a field sort of overlapping all the various incentives that we have and really sort of respecting teachers' time in the process. And so I think that's where we're constantly trying to figure out, you know, if we can make the degree really valuable, then, you know, if you got to go back and get a master's degree in Pennsylvania for your level two, let's make that a really valuable master's degree that has all the best possible PD you'd ever want, but covers off a bunch of the new cutting edge tech and sort of experiences and will embed it into your workday. So it's not taking up as much time as it, you know, otherwise would if you were doing it nights and weekends.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, the nights and the weekends and all the time. And so, but it's ongoing. And I mean, we're in education and we're constantly learning, but knowing that there's resources out there. And I know that I will make sure that I put in, because if you go to your website, like you offer, there's so much information there for teachers. And it really is reassuring too, because if somebody feels overwhelmed, like, oh, you know, I have to find some learning opportunities and I don't know where to go. And then they look and they see that there's steps in the process and the support is there. Like that's going to matter the most for teachers who might be kind of hesitant to, I guess, like taking on something else. So I have enjoyed talking to you. I love your angle and your take on a lot of things, the very realness, authenticity of what you speak in your experience. And so before we end, is there anything else that you'd like to add, or even if it's just sharing, you know, resources or something that if anybody's interested in learning more about Bloomboard, you know, what should they do?
Yeah, so certainly our website, right? There's a ton of ways that you can sort of reach out to us. My email is just jason@bloomboard.com if you have questions. I mean, again, I think at the end of the day, right, we're trying to solve one of the gnarliest problems that exist in both society and obviously in education. And so we're always looking for more partners and more districts and more, right, sort of higher ed partners to help advance the work. And so please feel free to reach out. Again, we're super excited. I do say, like, we're going to get to a world here pretty interestingly in the next 3 to 5 years where I think sort of GI Bill like, right, anyone who wants to do the best work you can do and teach is going to be able to get a fully funded career path to be able to do so, and we'll be able to do it while working full time on the job, and that will change the dynamic for our education system in really crazy powerful ways given, you know, all the things that are going on right now. So we're super excited about the work and super excited about where we're headed. And again, happy to connect more. It's helpful.
All right. Well, I am super excited to have had the chance to talk with you and to learn more about what you offer. So thanks for your time today. And for anybody listening, I will be sure to put all of the information and links into the show notes. I hope you will keep listening, subscribe to the podcast and to my newsletter. And thank you, Jason, for joining me. And we will catch y'all. We'll catch y'all the next time.
Appreciate it. Thanks, y'all. Okay.